You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we return with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I'm your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and here on a, I guess we'll call it a Taco Thursday, is Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown, talking with us here, continuing to review the Ravens 2021 season, previewing this team's 2022 offseason. Spencer, the Ravens, I mean, six straight games, just unheard of in the John Harbaugh era. You know, a collapse for the ages, really. Now, the injuries piled up. The COVID outbreak was not at a timely time, but, you know, it's safe to say if the Ravens win two of those final six games, I mean, they're probably in the postseason right now. We're having a pretty different conversation. How are you doing today?
Doing well. It's absolutely right. It's unprecedented in the John Harbaugh era. The six game losing streak was something we haven't seen before. It was tough. And considering in five of those games, there were cruxes in each and every game where they just needed one side of the ball offensively or defensively to make a play. They had the Rams dead to rights on fourth down. They had the Steelers dead to rights on fourth down. They faced situations time and time again where they weren't able to get it done. You know, they took the Browns, pushed them to their limit. The Steelers in the first matchup, they are a fingertip away from Mark Andrews walking in and winning that game. And maybe that butterfly effect is Lamar Jackson staying healthy somehow and being able to carry on. But they couldn't get it. John Harbaugh said, we just couldn't come up with a play. And a lot of people took that. It felt like, you know, to mean the offense, but on the defense, how many fourth downs they just couldn't make a stop when they needed to. A lot of game-winning drives by opponents. The Rams game, you know, the Packers game, they just couldn't make those one play game-winning situations. And it was funny because Ed Reed tweets and says, as the Ravens kick a field goal to go into overtime against the Steelers in week 18, he says, you know, this is what should have happened last time. And they ended up losing still. So, you know, they saw both fates essentially. So it was tough, but here we are.
Yep. And, you know, there are plenty of ways for this team to improve this offseason. I mean, through the draft, through free agency, bringing guys back, new faces coming in. But there is a possibility that this team might lose a lot of players to free agency. And we'll talk about that in the second segment. But I did want to talk about this Steelers game, Spencer, a little bit in week 18. The Ravens obviously losing 16-13 in overtime. And really, to me, it was Tyler Huntley's worst performance of the year. Just some decisions that weren't great. Obviously, you're looking at the interceptions and even the fumble where it was the bad snap by Bradley Bozeman. He gets the ball and has a clear recovery of it, gets up and tries to run with it, and then the ball gets punched out by TJ Watt. So plays like those. Also, the deep ball accuracy was just never there for him this season, and it's an area where he does need to improve this offseason. But what were your overall takeaways from Huntley's final performance of the 2021 season and him moving forward as presumably the backup to Lamar Jackson in 2022 and hopefully beyond?
Yeah, I think that Huntley will be the backup ultimately for quite some time. I know that Ben Albright, who is a reliable kind of NFL insider out of Denver, KOA Denver, said that teams are expected to sniff around Huntley a little bit, which is certainly right. And I think that the Ravens, you know, the equal trade compensation on him, I would think, you know, fourth, fifth round pick teams will probably offer to, you know, you want, I look at him almost like a Gardner Minshew maybe in terms of value and in terms of being, you know, a capable guy, but not the guy, maybe a Taylor Heinicke to even a less, I would say those are somewhat similar players in ways, Taylor Heinicke and Tyler Huntley. But like you said, he needs to work on the deep ball accuracy and it haunted him. He floats a ball to Mark Andrews. It looks like Tyler Huntley is not a mutter. You know, it was a wet, not terribly windy, but a very wet, cold game. And the ball seemed like it was a bowling ball to him at times. You think of, you know, and a lot of people want to place blame on Hollywood Brown, which, I mean, sure, rip the ball away, fall down, you know, rip the ball out of bounds or something. But has Hollywood wide open some 28, 29 yards downfield? You know, I think it was from the far hash, but in the NFL, the hash is, it wasn't from the far numbers or anything. So has Hollywood wide open, floats a ball, took so long to get there that Minka Fitzpatrick was able to recover, go punch the ball out, sails the ball over Mark Andrews' head. I think the deepest pass we've seen him complete this year was a moon ball to Mark Andrews that he got in this one. But A lot of people said, oh, well, he's so decisive underneath. You know, he's a quick passer. You know, he plays within structure. Well, he kind of has to because of some limitations there. And that's where I kind of liken him to Gardner Minshew in some ways. So it was definitely a bad performance. It felt like the pressure was too much. At one point, you know, you mentioned that fumble, Kevin. He's belly down on the ball with his elbows on the ground and somehow, you know, has the ball and somehow manages to get up and lose it. You got to be able to read the room there and not turn something bad into something horrific. You know, that's turning spilled milk into, you know, tears when it didn't need to be. And Huntley showed some flashes. He showed, you know, moxie, competitiveness, toughness, you know, the athleticism, the decision making. I think he's learned a lot of good lessons from Lamar Jackson and will continue to grow behind him. And maybe the biggest one being, hey, throw it to the big fella. You know, had a good chemistry, and even Josh Johnson did. So you look at this Ravens team and you see, hey, Mark Andrews really is just that good. It's not just the chemistry of Lamar Jackson. And even going back to when Joe Flacco was quarterback, Andrews had some moments. So that was definitely nice what he did there. You know, had some moments throwing the ball up for Rashad Bateman, but you know, those went away. Couldn't find him deep or couldn't find him really at level two anymore later in the season. So Huntley, you know, had a really admirable performance against the Packers, who, not to rain on his parade, but were not at full strength. They didn't have Kenny Clark. They didn't have Za'Darius Smith. They didn't have Jaire Alexander. They were without quite a few guys there. And he had a nice game in that game. I'd say that was definitely his best game. But looking at the Steelers game in particular, he just forced the ball to Mark Andrews in the end zone when Rashad Bateman, it looked like it was a two-man concept where you want to run kind of a pylon, which is, you know, crossers that attack the actual physical pylon down in the end zone. And the Ravens played off of that, where instead Mark Andrews broke vertically and Rashad Bateman broke back against that route to the end zone. And it looked like it was leading horses to water in terms of, you know, drawing defenders to Mark Andrews. And that's exactly what happened. And he decided to throw the ball there anyway. So, I mean, 4 or 5 starts for Huntley, you know, he looks better, I'd say, than what we saw against the Bills last year in terms of throwing motion, being tighter, more compact. The athleticism is there, all of those good things. But in the end, you know, he's got a lot to work on, like you said. I think he's a great backup. I think he's got some potential. And maybe in a couple more years, might get a shot at being a starter a la Tyrod Taylor and kind of sitting behind Joe Flacco for a while. And of course, you know, Taylor being a part of a Super Bowl team probably helped a little bit, but had a nice career there. I think that Taylor was a more advanced passer for sure coming out of VTech. But in the end, I think Huntley's a nice piece, but this game was too big for him in many moments. But the one part that kind of goes unnoticed is that he did lead a game-tying drive in this game to have Justin Tucker kick a field goal, used his legs, completed a couple passes underneath, and did that. And we also saw him have a game-winning drive against the Bears. So there's moxie there. There's some potential there. There's ability there. But right now, just needs a lot more to work on, and he's not going to be a real threat until he can open up downfield and attack deep. You know, people said that about Lamar Jackson even after the 2019 season. And I think Huntley's longest completed pass this year was like 30 yards in the air. So that's where he needs to work. That's where he needs to get better. He needs to continue improving the torque that he can generate from his base and that throwing motion, and hopefully it'll yield some results.
Yeah, and you know, you talked about that Bills game. That was also one where he failed to connect with Marquise Brown on a deep shot, which would have been a touchdown and honestly changed the momentum of that entire football game. But again, he misses him, and it's been a consistent theme for him where, yeah, the deep ball accuracy is something he does need to improve on. And, you know, I think Baltimore has to feel pretty good about their quarterback room right now. I mean, to have Huntley as a backup to a player like Lamar Jackson, I know the Tyler Huntley versus Lamar Jackson starter talk kind of like took over Twitter for like a week or something, and it's just like, what are we talking about here? But it was that where it's like the pitting the two against each other that really put it like, all right, you're picking one guy up while tearing the other down, when in reality Baltimore has two good quarterbacks and they can both play and keep the Ravens competitive. But it's obvious that Lamar Jackson is the starter for multiple reasons and Huntley is the backup for multiple reasons. That's not saying that Huntley's a terrible player or anything like that. I think Baltimore does have to feel good about that quarterback room. But Spencer, the Ravens defense, especially over the course of the second half of the season, obviously losing so many key playmakers, and they just couldn't really put it together when it mattered. I mean, they played decently well overall. But then you see in the fourth quarter, in overtime periods, depending on the game, the defense, there were collapses there where it just seemed like they couldn't stop anything. You know, you could point to multiple key moments in multiple different games where the Ravens play well for 3.5 quarters and then everything just falls apart and they end up losing. So is that something that, you know, heading into 2022, you're concerned about, or is this just more a thing of, look, they were down like their entire cornerback room and they were missing all these different guys? But at the same time, I mean, execution does have to be there regardless of who is on the field if you're a professional football team.
Yeah, they didn't finish a lot. And early in this season, you know, they did finish a couple times. They finished against the Vikings. They finished against the Colts. They finished against the Chiefs. They couldn't get it done against the Raiders. But going back, I mean, 2019, they closed out some really awesome games, the 49ers game. They're able to, you know, put themselves in a position to win. The Bills game in 2019, Marcus Peters, you know, gets them off the field. We're able to close out a couple there. And then last year was a little bit funnier in 2020, where they didn't quite, you know, get off to the hottest start. And they were actually in the middle of the season, they struggled and then played some weaker opponents that they were able to kind of run train on. So it was an interesting situation to see play out this year as they started with that. And as you see Marlon Humphrey go down and, you know, Anthony Averett go down, they just continue to lose guys in game. They lose Chris Westry, gets to a point where Brandon Stevens is playing cornerback, which luckily he did play at SMU a little bit, but how long did he play it there? Not very long. So I was surprised how long they held up with only two healthy corners and in that game, but eventually it came down to that 4th-and-8 play. And I was surprised that the Steelers weren't using bunches or trips or stacks more often to force communication between a bunch of safeties pretty much. And they ultimately did that and were able to get a miscommunication. You see, I believe Chuck Clark and maybe Kayvon Seymour frantically communicating to try to figure out a bunch on that 4th-and-8 and ends up with an inbreaker that's just wide open. So those new guys that haven't had a ton of reps and guys that maybe aren't the hyper talented Marlon Humphrey that can kind of have a little bit more margin for error, or Marcus Peters don't have the intangibles there. Don't have the film study there to the same degree. Don't have the reps there. Don't have the confidence. They folded. So it was, you know, a factor that applied to both sides of the ball. They couldn't finish, and finish is a t-shirt that John Harbaugh literally printed and had Ravens wearing throughout last season. So it's something they need to work on. It's something that they're going to be able to use as fuel to the fire in the off season. Finish. We have to finish, especially defensively, and be able to close out, win games. And again, it was truly both sides of the ball that couldn't make the play. Lamar and Mark Andrews against the Steelers in the first matchup, you know, just slightly off. All these instances where it was so close, but they just couldn't quite get it done. And that's going to be the message throughout the offseason. So, you know, I know that fans are tired of hearing injury excuses because it feels like it's been going on for so long that it's kind of desensitized people to the fact and they want to place blame elsewhere. But in the end, what is the team that played the Steelers, that roster against the Steelers, what does that team do over a 17-game schedule? You know, that's not going to be a playoff team. That's not going to be a 500 team. That's not going to be a maybe even a 6 or 7 win team. So they were limited. I think that it goes to show that John Harbaugh's message has not gone stale. Mark Andrews, Tyus Bowser, who of course goes down with a terrible injury, but so many players on this team. Chuck Clark, even after the press game conference, immediately said, "Watch how we bounce back." They were still in it every minute of every game over the last month and a half, aside from that Bengals game. And they fought admirably in that one in the first half to you know, make that a close affair until the Bengals finally just continued to bust out in the second half. So I think it shows that this coaching staff can get guys prepared. They can out-coach their opponents. I mean, look at the Rams, a division winner. Multiple superstars, multiple all-pro players, have them playing to the final whistle, you know, the final drives of the game with that team that is punching their ticket and is a dangerous team. So I think that's a testament to this coaching staff and their ability to navigate, find tendencies, find weaknesses, and play to the strengths of depth guys week in and week out. And ultimately, Eric DaCosta as well. I mean, people wanted to say, you know, why are you doing the same thing with Chris Westry that you would do with Marlon Humphrey? Well, it's because they have a type and they bring guys in to fit their scheme that will, you know, their scheme will bring out the best in players. Players' strengths will bring out the best in that scheme. Chris Westry, a tall, long press corner. So they're going to ask him to do some of the same things. He just doesn't have the experience. So I think it's a testament to Eric DaCosta in the front office, being able to find some of these guys. You know, they go get Freeman, they go get Murray, they get Westry. They bring in Josh Oliver, who played a ton of snaps this year. Eric Tomlinson, tons of, you know, guys off the street that, you know, bring in Josh Bynes back. all these different things. Justin Ellis has been a nice player for very cheap. So bringing these guys in that can, you know, get the job done to a degree, but it was too much without too many star players. So in the end, you know, 8-9, 14th pick, and here we are.
Yeah, and this wasn't like the Ravens, you know, that they had their injuries during training camp, then they were healthy for the entire season after that. It was they continuously lost players all season, whether it was just weekly things or guys were missing practice, whether they were on IR, had to miss a couple months, or more season-long things. They continuously lost players, it seemed like, every single week. And the fact that they were able to kind of put that together, I mean, it's pretty impressive because, you know, you're right. What could a team have done with that roster in week 18 over the course of the entire season? That's probably a top 10 picking team. You know, they might be picking in the top seven. So, you know, the team started off without J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards and Marcus Peters and, you know, Rashad Bateman was out at that point in week one. The team ends the year without all those guys. Bateman came back, but then you're minus Lamar Jackson, minus Ricard, minus Humphrey, minus Elliott, all these players. And so, yeah, the Ravens couldn't finish. That's something they have to improve on. And that's not a debate or anything, but I think for what they went through, it's still pretty impressive overall. Those are the types of, you know, moral victories you can take away. I know moral victories don't necessarily win playoff games or win championships, but, you know, taking that away to next season, I think is still a positive that you can take away. We'll head into our first break. Then when we get back, we'll be talking a bit about the Ravens coaching situation and players they could re-sign. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. We're all looking for an edge these days, and I'd like to thank Online Gambling for sponsoring today's podcast. If you don't know already, onlinegambling.com is a website dedicated to giving bettors the edge. Throughout the playoffs, they're providing you with the best NFL tips, news, and more to help make your bets as informed as ever. If you're planning on placing a bet during the playoffs, make sure you head to Online Gambling before you do. OnlineGambling.com gives bettors the edge by providing the best and most trusted experience online all day, every day. That includes their OG tips section where you find their own Super Bowl picks as well as the inside track on how to beat the odds throughout the NFL playoffs. Make sure you visit OnlineGambling.com/NFL for all the latest gambling news, tips, and info to beat the odds and give you the edge throughout the playoffs. Remember, OnlineGambling.com/NFL to make the most of this year's playoffs. We return here, our second segment of this Locked On Ravens Thursday edition with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher, and we're now going to dive into the 2022 offseason portion of this. And Spencer, I know a big talking point this offseason and honestly throughout the entire year was the Ravens coaching staff and their performance over the entire season. Now, I know that you know that Greg Roman was the main guy in that conversation, and a lot of the people have said Greg Roman's time in Baltimore should be up. You know, fire Greg Roman, get rid of him, bring in somebody new, someone fresh. And even, you know, there have been calls for John Harbaugh. There have been calls for Don Martindale. Those are kind of the big three, obviously, of the Ravens coaching staff. And I think when looking at each situation, there are, I guess, reasons you can bring up for, yes, this person should not be back, and yes, this person should be back. Now, Harbaugh and Martindale, I think, are safe. I mean, I don't see reasons why they should, like, there are, but I don't see reasons why they should be fired at this stage. I mean, Martindale could leave for the Giants as a head coaching candidate, but, you know, it's really Roman where it's like the, all right, what are the reasons why? What are the reasons why not? Spencer, if you had to look at the Greg Roman situation and even a bit of John Harbaugh and Don Martindale as well, what are some of the reasons you can see for why the Ravens would potentially move on and why the Ravens would potentially let this person go?
Well, I think Wink Martindale getting head coaching interviews is a testament to the fact that he won't be going on the Ravens' accord. I think that there are some narratives that have gotten hyper-focused, you know, sack totals and blitzing and things of that nature. But before Marlon Humphrey goes down, I mean, the Ravens were starting to play really well defensively, considering how limited they were. They definitely need to revamp their roster in that case. But Wink Martindale, I mean, defense was top in the league in red zone and third down percentage most of the year until they really started to fold with injuries and COVID and things late in the season. Martindale, I think, since taking over in 2018, Ravens have allowed the second fewest points in the NFL behind the Patriots still. So the body of work as a whole is outstanding. Wink Martindale is a respected guy, and I think the only way he leaves is if he takes a head coaching job somewhere else in the NFL. This will be the second time the New York Giants have interviewed him. They interviewed him on the Joe Judge process, which shows how poor their decision-making is not to take a Wink Martindale over a Joe Judge when they absolutely should have. Wink Martindale and Greg Roman both are guys that, you know, were getting Coach of the Year votes merely 2 years ago, and now a lot of fans want to see these guys out. But even past that, The Ravens like continuity, and they like to promote from within. That is a strong tendency, especially throughout the Harbaugh tenure and really even going back to Art Modell. Steve Bisciotti has talked about how he models the Pittsburgh Steelers as a franchise that he wants the Ravens to look like. The Ravens are still very young in the grand scheme of the NFL. There's only been a few teams, you know, four or five teams that have existed after the Ravens. You know, the Texans and a couple teams here and there. So the Ravens ultimately want to have that continuity. And then you go back to last offseason. McDonald gets poached by Jim Harbaugh, John Harbaugh's brother, to go be Michigan's defensive coordinator. He takes with him Matt Weiss, the running backs coach. He also, Joe Cullen gets poached by Urban Meyer. He takes Zach Orr. A litany of assistants end up following those two paths to Michigan and to Jacksonville. So the Ravens have to go out and bring in Rob Ryan. The Ravens have to go out and bring in Anthony Weaver. They had to replace a ton of assistant coaches. You know, they change Chris Hewitt's position as well. So I think that, you know, if Martindale is to get a head coaching job, you know, you can look to those guys, but he's not going to be leaving on the Ravens accord. He'll be leaving on the fact that another team wants to hire him and go in that direction. And I think that, you know, he wanted to bring Joe Brady with him to New York the first time. And I think that's a pretty enticing combo still, even though Brady had some limited success in Carolina. I think a lot of people are willing to give him another chance. Sounds like he's got some interest and is kind of waiting until the offseason fully hits to pick an avenue. So I think that the Ravens won't be parting ways with Wink Martindale in that sense. Greg Roman, similar situation. I mean, David Culley leaves, Matt Weiss leaves, ton of guys leave. They bring in T. Martin, they bring in Keith Williams. You know, those guys are supposed to have major roles. They do still have Joe D, but you know, James Urban, another guy. But of all of them, T. Martin is the only one who's called plays, and he kind of, you know, got phased out of calling plays at the collegiate level. But people love what he was able to do with wide receivers, and the same thing with Williams. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think they like those two guys a lot. Urban, you know, there's a lot of rumors as well, but never been a play caller. So I'm curious to see, you know, what the avenue would be if and when, because Greg Roman is not going to be the Ravens offensive coordinator forever. So if they part ways, you know, who it would be. But again, a lot of turnover. The Ravens don't like that inconsistency year to year. So I think that would be the reason why they keep him. And aside from that, you know, I believe second in points scored since taking over as offensive coordinator. You hear Mark Andrews saying, Greg Roman helped make me into the player that I am. He, you know, I would not be where I am without him. You hear Lamar Jackson three times throughout the last couple of years. Greg Roman, genius, calling him a genius, calling him a genius. You hear also some comments like Hollywood Brown in this offseason, people talking about pass concepts and passing concepts, which to me is usually a kind of a blanketed statement that doesn't actually usually get into detail. But Marquise Brown mentions at the podium this August that direct quote was, it's on, you know, he said, Greg Roman has a playbook that'll make a Bible, you know, look like a kid's story. And it's on us to show him that he can trust us to run those in games. And with a young receiving core, with new receivers, coaches, with mistakes that do get made, you know, Roman could be better. Absolutely. I think there needs to be a little bit more structure as opposed to letting guys run as many option routes as they do and some things like that. But ultimately, you know, from the sound of it, they've got a lot in that playbook that they still aren't even using. So everyone wants to make fun of the vault and all that stuff. Well, you do end up seeing Devin Duvernay, who that was in reference to, ends up getting 17 manufactured touches this year as a guy who's, you know, fourth, fifth in the touches category for the Ravens, who they want to get the ball to. So, you know, Roman, I think if they want to let him go, it's because Lamar Jackson doesn't want him, but Lamar made some comments that he's been great for us. You know, we're glad to have him and things of that nature. So if they don't want him, it's because Lamar doesn't want him and because there's, you know, some tension bubbling or something, but it just doesn't seem that way at all based on comments and things of that nature. So, you know, Roman gets a lot of flack. He's a dominant run game, arguably, you know, top two or three run game mind in the world. I think it's, you know, not crazy to say that. His pass game is married to his run game very much so. So without J.K. Dobbins, without, you know, Gus Edwards, Lamar Jackson goes down eventually. They don't have Ronnie Stanley, you know. They do finally somewhat replace Marshall Yanda, but they don't lack that. They lack that tenacity. Nick Boyle, paramount player in Greg Roman's run scheme, gone as well. So I just think that you've got a couple guys in place in Urban and Martin and Williams that, you know, Urban's been here a few years now as well. Williams and Martin, you know, if those are going to be options, you'd like to have them get another year. And I think we ultimately see Roman end up staying. And maybe, you know, I think it's likely if the Ravens struggle, again, I thought that could have been the case this year, but if they struggle mightily or incompetent with a more healthy team off the bat, then we see Greg Roman get fired midseason and someone else, maybe a James Urban takes over. But right now there's also that excuse of the injuries. They talked about, and this whole training camp dating all the way back to August was a mess. Lamar misses the first 10 days of camp. Gus Edwards misses the first 10 days of camp. By the time Lamar comes back, Rashad Bateman, Hollywood Brown, and Sammy Watkins aren't practicing within 3 days. So they talked about how they wanted to run more under center offense, run game out of that. Well, they did start doing that a little bit in practice. We saw it, especially, you know, the first couple of days Lamar's back, but then ultimately, you know, you end up not having Ronnie Stanley for a bit of it and Lamar's playing catch up. So they didn't get to install enough of that. Then you have Edwards and Dobbins go down and also Justice Hill. So it was just a three-ring circus all the way from the beginning. Before the injuries even started, there was the COVID situation and everyone talking about, is Lamar Jackson vaccinated or unvaccinated, yada, yada, yada. So it's just been a mess of a year. So I think that they're ready for Roman to, you know, do it or get off the pot. I think that at this point it's, you know, all right, you know, you were good for us. You're great for us in 2019, 2020, you know, once Stanley and Boyle go down, the offense hurts a little bit, but guess what? Down the stretch, they averaged 270 yards a game rushing, going a win streak to make the playoffs there. You know, get some things done in the pass game a little bit, but that ultimately lacked. So they go out and get Rashad Bateman. They go out and get Sammy Watkins. They've got another couple younger players, Brown, Duvernay, Prochet, Tylan Wallace now into the mix. So I think that ultimately, especially if Wink Martindale takes a coaching job, you want to replace both of your coordinators after you just replaced most of your assistant coaching staff. That is a massive turnover in a season where you need to get things back to normal. You need to calm things down. You want Ronnie Stanley back. You want, you know, Lamar Jackson back, these running backs back. You want to get this offensive line together and finally have a balanced offense where you feel like you have a talented offensive line, a talented backfield, including your quarterback, and finally a balanced receiving core. The Ravens could even add to a little bit this offseason. So I think that if we will see Roman back, especially if Wink leaves. I think it's just too tall of a task where the Ravens, you know, and especially Harbaugh, they can't have another bad year. They can't miss the playoffs again. They're not supposed to be missing the playoffs right now. They're not supposed to be at home. They're not supposed to be picking 14th. They're supposed to be competing for Super Bowls at the end of Lamar Jackson's rookie contract. So I don't think Harbaugh wants to stir the pot and allow that kind of Pandora's box to open of that much influx at one time. And ultimately, I think they end up keeping Roman and keeping Wink if Wink doesn't get a head coaching job, which feels like he's pretty likely to.
Yeah, the whole Giants situation makes it, I think, a lot more likely that he will. And the whole Roman situation is interesting in itself because, I mean, look, Roman's not a perfect coordinator, right? He's not by far. I mean, there are cons to what he does, but he is a great rushing mind. You talked about the continuity, which, like, the Ravens during the Joe Flacco era just did not have an offensive coordinator. It was a guy every year, every 2 years. But, you know, the injuries are a key factor here. And I think that they just, if they were to keep him, they would just want to see what it's like fully healthy. They did not get to see that this year from the jump because they didn't have Dobbins and Edwards and everybody else who they were missing. But, you know, I know people are frustrated with the play clock going 3, 2, 1. We've seen frustration from players with that happening on the field sometimes where it's like, why is that happening? So I know, you know, pass concepts and situational play calling, which has also been sometimes an issue for Roman, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they end up playing the situation because it really could go either way. But at this point, I just don't know if the team wants to let go. You mentioned both the coordinators and the injuries that happened this year. We could see that direction, or the team could just say, look, Roman's great, but at the same time, if we outgrown him, that's a question they have to ask themselves as well. But Spencer, the offseason, a lot of chances for improvements of this roster. But part of that is in free agency where the Ravens have a ton of their own guys who will be free agents, a ton of big namers, a ton of small namers as well, but all very important to the way that this team operates. But just based off really early predictions, Spencer, do you see the Ravens kind of taking this offseason as a time to re-sign a lot of their own guys, or could you potentially see a lot of these guys walk?
It's difficult. I think a lot of them are in question. The first guy I'll talk about is Deshaun Elliott. I could see him coming back on a one-year sort of prove-it deal. I think he has a lot of admiration for the Ravens sticking with him through his injuries. And I think that they like who he is as a person on the practice field and as a player. And I think that I could see them, you know, sticking around with him, giving him another year, you know, $3-4 million deal maybe, and allowing him to cement himself, get back healthy, and then maybe go hit free agency again next year. I don't know that he would ink a huge comp pick in free agency, especially coming off another injury right now. So the familiarity is there. They like him. They value continuity in their system. Feels like there could be a lot of defensive turnover. Tyus Bowser also, you know, put a question mark right now, considering his Achilles injury. So bringing someone back on that back end that knows what's going on, can help in the film room, can help on the practice field, and help in games, not a bad idea on the cheap. I feel like Anthony Averett is likely gone. I don't think they're going to have money for him. I think that he can be a nice number two corner, and I think he will have a market. He proved himself this year to me many times. Did he have, you know, bad moments, the Colts game? Absolutely. But one of the most targeted players in football, fought for the Ravens through and through, got a couple of nice interceptions, many nice pass breakups, relatively sticky in coverage. There were some miscommunications that occurred for sure, but I think we could see Averett getting paid a little bit on this free agent market. Corners aren't a dime a dozen. He's an Alabama pedigree guy. He's a Baltimore Raven pedigree guy. So I think we could see him getting paid elsewhere, maybe, you know, $7-8 million a year over a 3-year deal somewhere. And I don't know if the Ravens have that right now for him, especially considering, you know, there's talks of what's going to happen with Marcus Peters even. So I don't know if Averett's back. I'm going to say no to that one. Bradley Bozeman seems like he's asking a lot of money. I think that he is a great person. I think that he is a nice player. I don't think he is a tenacious force on the offensive line, but he's been a calming presence. It would be unfortunate because the Ravens had trouble at center since Ryan Jensen until Bradley Bozeman took over. So he calmed things down there very much so. So I don't think the Ravens want to subject themselves to more uncertainty at center when they have uncertainty at left tackle. They have some uncertainty at left guard. They have some uncertainty at right tackle. Basically, the only real certainty they have right now is Kevin Zeitler playing right guard next year. So it's tough. It feels like he knows that he has some leverage there. Feels like it's the fact that, you know, from what I've heard, they're trying to leverage the fact that he played guard for 3 years and there's versatility. But to me, his play at center is much higher than his play at guard. And his play at center is not, you know, remarkable. I don't think anyone is going out of their way to say, man, this guy is really winning games for the Ravens, but he's a nice player. He's a solid player. He's a force in the community. I think a nice deal, I think, in my opinion, would be a long-term deal, maybe a 4-5 year deal where you can have a minimal cap hit in year one. The cap's going to continue to go up in the next couple of years, especially post-COVID, so, or post what we know as COVID now. So I think that, you know, if you could have a $4-5 million hit this year and keep him in the long term, have him play that second contract out, that wouldn't be a terrible idea. It just, you know, you need some certainty on this offensive line, some level of continuity, and they trust Bozeman a lot there. So I would say that him getting to free agency is going to be dangerous because the Ravens tend to not retain players once they get there. That open market, they get, you know, outbid a little bit. We've seen it with CJ Mosley, with Matt Judon, you know, quite a few times over the last couple of years. If guys hit the market, a lot of the time they're gone. So we'll see what happens with Bradley Bozeman. But I'm, you know, pretty up in the air, pretty gray there. Other than that, you know, Pat Ricard seems like the injuries are starting to pile up. Very physical player. I don't know if there's a huge market for him. There's definitely a very special place in Baltimore for him. And particularly if Greg Roman comes back, if Greg Roman does not come back and we get news that, you know, oh, well, the Ravens decided to part ways with Greg Roman and they're going to have Pep Hamilton as their offensive coordinator now. You know, maybe there's not a place for a fullback like Ricard in that offense, but he does play a ton of tight end. He's an excellent special teamer. If you notice, Devin Duvernay's return average significantly went down when Pat Ricard was hurt because he wasn't leading the way anymore and absolutely sealing lanes for him. A lot of Duvernay's returns were based off of where Pat Ricard was going, playing a fullback on those kick returns as the up man. So he does a lot, plays a lot of special team snaps, can play some tight end for you, can move guys in the run game. You know, you can have him go bully, have him come in motion and go block a defensive end for you. So against the Tennessee Titans in 2020, he had a drive where he caught 3 passes and, you know, help march the Ravens down the field. So I know that some people are like, oh, well, why are they playing a fullback over a wide receiver? Well, that's because they want to create an extra gap in the run game. It's kind of like, you know, asking why did you eat dessert instead of breakfast? Well, I don't know. It's 11 o'clock at night. I wanted something sweet. You know, there's different aspects to it. So Ricard up in the air. I don't know what the market would be for him. I know that he's getting kind of renowned. It's a Pro Bowl player and attention is there, but there's not a huge fullback market in the NFL. So, you know, and the fact that the Ravens were the ones who turned him into a fullback, kept him, paid him once, we'll see. But it feels like the injuries are starting to mount a little bit. I also wouldn't be surprised to see Derek Wolfe not back in Baltimore next season. It doesn't really open up much money for them, but feels like, you know, things went a little awry there this year, but maybe he does come back and is more happy with, you know, the COVID situation and everything. So that was the one to look out for. But other than that, you know, it's kind of cloudy right now in Baltimore. It's a lot of decisions to be made, and Patrick McCary being re-signed before Bradley Bozeman, you know, maybe they're anticipating Bozeman not re-signing. So it's going to be a fluid situation, but the Ravens offensive line is a mess right now. And I'd say you probably do need to keep Bozeman. I don't know that he's, you know, your Super Bowl driving center, but the uncertainty that they suffered through, the Gino Gradkowski's of the world, the Jeremy Zutas of the world, the, you know, Matt Skura's of the world that were so inconsistent, snaps going all over the place, things of that nature. The Ravens can't go back to that. So either way, the center position is going to need to be addressed in a high regard.
Yeah, I agree. It's one that with the inconsistencies they've had, I mean, especially, you know, you go back to 2020 and you see like the Matt Skura era there, like, you know, Skura played great in 2019 before his injury. 2020 was just horrific. McCary comes in, you know, also has his share of snap issues. So getting consistency there is very important. I could also see the team re-signing players on the one-year deal. So they signed like Justin Houston, I think it'll be great to bring back. You know, I've been a fan of his for a long time and his game. And, you know, I also think that Devonta Freeman earned another shot in Baltimore as maybe a third down back, although maybe they do go younger at that position. And I don't think Justice Hill comes back. So, you know, their third down running back, maybe like a Hassan Haskins, something like that, a mid-round running back who could come in and kind of go younger at the position, even though they are young already. But we'll talk about the draft a little bit in our final segment. We'll head into our final break now. When we get back, we'll talk about the 2022 draft and preview it a little bit. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Hey Ravens fans, this is Kevin Ostreicher with an incredible app everyone who buys gas needs to know about, and Get Upside. Just download the free Get Upside app in the App Store or Google Play right now and use promo code TOUCHDOWN and get a bonus 25 cents per gallon on your first fill up. That's up to 50 cents a gallon cash back. Don't pay full price at the pump anymore. Get cash back using Get Upside. Just download the free Get Upside app and use promo code TOUCHDOWN to get up to 50 cents a gallon cash back on your first tank. Some people who drive a lot are making as much as $300 a month in cash back, and there's no catch. The cash back is added right to your account. You can cash out anytime to your bank account, PayPal, or any gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Get Upside app and use promo code TOUCHDOWN to get up to 50 cents a gallon cash back on your first tank. That's code TOUCHDOWN. BetOnline would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for the best sports wagering action for 2022. New year and new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive our 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. We've returned here, our final segment of this Locked On Ravens Thursday edition. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, it is draft season now as the Ravens are out of the playoffs. It's one of the best times of the year, although unfortunately I wish it could have come more so in February for the Ravens. But now that we are here, we talked about the Ravens' needs a little bit, but the draft, the Ravens are projected to have 10 picks. And I think that Eric DaCosta, again, loves to maneuver up and down that draft board. And a lot of the Ravens' draft needs will depend on what happens during free agency, who they bring back, who they sign, who gets let go, and who walks. But your early indications, Spencer, what are some of the key positions where you can see the Ravens drafting early, some of those bigger needs? And then as the draft goes on, you could see them taking value guys in the mid later rounds.
Certainly, this draft class in general is a rare one because of the fact that last year eligibility was extended due to COVID. So many players decided to come back for an extra year because of that. There wasn't in-person scouting as much. Only the SEC really played a full schedule among, you know, Power Five conferences. And so many players came back that this is expected to be the most robust draft in probably a decade or more, in terms of how many draftable players they are going to be on teams' boards. So the Ravens are in a unique place there. they certainly need to improve in the trenches. And I don't know that they're going to have the cap space right now unless they extend Lamar Jackson, which can create up to $17 million in cap space this year. In order to be able to really fill that offensive line in, I'm not sure that there's necessarily the bodies right now who are supposed to hit free agency. Of course, we could see some Zeitler-like cuts that the Ravens can reach out and snag a guy. We could also see them make a trade, sure. But they need to address the trenches. They have an expired defensive line. Brandon Williams, his contract's up. It seems like he's willing to come back and, you know, do his duty as a Raven, as a Jimmy Smith, as an Anthony Levine, as a Pernell McPhee to play for the cheap and you know, dedicate himself to the Ravens. It seems like he's not and made no indication that he's ready to retire. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him on a 1 or 2 year deal. You mentioned Justin Houston. I definitely, especially considering Tyus Bowser, feel like they have to bring Justin Houston back. But other than that, you know, Calais Campbell didn't quite seem like he was done yet, but you'd like to add a body there or two. It feels like this defensive line class is going to have some really interesting ones. The offensive line class seems outstanding at the top of the draft. You're talking about three potential left tackles that are franchise type left tackles. To me, the one to really examine is Charles Cross. Not the mauler that Ike Ekwonu or Evan Neal are, the other two top tackles in this draft. He's a little bit lighter. He also played in an air raid offense for Mike Leach, where they're not running the ball a ton. So he is working with Duke Mannyweather this offseason, who's a renowned offensive line guru. And Mannyweather has already said, we're going to get this kid finishing nasty. You see some finishing as a pass protector with some nastiness to it. You see a couple reps down by the goal line and some run situations there where you can see the nastiest. But to me, he's the best pure pass protector in this draft. And if the Ravens want to move forward, if you're someone who doesn't want to see Greg Roman continuing this run first, Lamar Jackson, you know, offense, and despite the fact Lamar Jackson is maybe the most dangerous runner in the NFL, you don't want that to be a part of it as much anymore, then you should be looking at Charles Cross. I think he's a technician. I think he's got insane feet, great length, an athlete. He's thin. He moves really well. His anchor is still really strong. And I think he's the one of the three that could make it to 14. I'm not really expecting all three at this point in time. I'm not really expecting all three of them to make it there, but would certainly keep an eye on him. Moving along on the offensive line in the early round, you know, Kenyon Green out of Texas A&M is a finisher. He is nasty. He has played left tackle, left guard, and right tackle for Texas A&M. Reminds you of Elton Jenkins out of Mississippi State, Green Bay Packer, who is out for the season this year, but played at an all-pro level before he was hurt, played at an all-pro level last year, can move him anywhere up and down the offensive line. And hey, with the Ronnie Stanley situation, with, you know, the uncertainty at right tackle as well to a degree, Kenyon Green can do it all for you a little bit there. So he might be the one where you can stick him at right tackle. And if Ronnie Stanley's in good shape, if not, you know, you might be able to put him at left tackle, let him continue to get there. He's going to be able to be a run blocker for you. Needs to improve on his true pass sets, his vertical sets, as he you know, matures, if he wants to be there. Trevor Penning, another one. You know, there's all one of the most interesting guys to me in this draft for a Greg Roman offense in particular is Daniel Falele out of Minnesota. 6'9", 380 pounds. He went to IMG Academy. He's very new to the sport still, relatively. Hard not to see a Jordan Mailata comp, another, you know, Pacific Islander type or an Australian type that is going to continue to learn, continue to get better. But he is a mountain of a man. And it's hard not to see a lot of Orlando Brown Jr. in his game. 6'9", but a knee bender, able to get really low, understands how to squat down and use his length to wash defenders out. Really, really well. I think it'd be a good right tackle, especially in a Greg Roman offense. He can move bodies. His anchor might be the best in this class. No one can move him with a bull rush at all. So I think those are all some interesting offensive line options to look at. Cornerback, would not be surprised to see the Ravens go that route at all. We saw them or read about them sniffing around Xavien Howard, Marcus Peters coming off of an ACL, Marlon Humphrey coming off of an injury. And in general, the Ravens just like to build their defense back to front. To me, as of right now, I need to watch a little bit more of Ahmad Gardner, but I'm seeing a little bit maybe more of a zone corner in Ahmad Gardner, a guy that doesn't quite fit the modus operandi of what the Ravens do despite his size and some things. But he does like to hit a little bit. He was, you know, a really thin guy coming out of high school and has improved there. But the perfect fit to me right now is Andrew Booth Jr. for this Ravens defense. outstanding press man, some of the best feet, some of the best balance in this class. I don't think Derek Stingley's going to be there, but Andrew Booth, supposed to be right around Marlon Humphrey's size, 5'11", 6', you know, 195, 200 pounds, five-star athlete coming out of high school. You know he's going to test really well, but he has insane ball skills, has made highlight reel diving interceptions, you know, levitating in the air for pass breakups, jumping on the ball, but he has that same tenacity against screens and in the run game, an elite competitor. He runs hot, you know, the motor's hot, all those cliche things. He's a hitter. He wants to hit. We see him shuck some offensive linemen at times, abuses wide receivers in the screen game and underneath and in the stock blocking game, makes a ton of plays. So Andrew Booth Jr., I think, is a really intriguing option at 14 there. You know, Sauce Gardner, a guy who just simply is able to mirror really well, is able to run stride for stride, has a lot of length, has long strides, can, you know, sink his hips decently well for someone who is 6'2", 6'3". Want to see a little bit more fluidity out of him. Want to see him be able to perform in man coverage a little bit more in some trail technique and some things of that nature. But I'm not quite done with my evaluation there, so I need to watch a few more games. But going to be a first-round player, elite production throughout his time at Cincinnati. I think that his name helps his stock a little bit. I think the fact that he's kind of taller and likes to press a good bit also helps. And then finally, Roger McCreary, who has done battle with some of the best, even dating back last year to LSU. So McCreary is going to be another one that is going to be a man, press man corner. Very competitive, very solid all around, very balanced. I think he's going to be a good corner, really, regardless of where he lands. It's kind of a question of whether he can be that number one guy at the NFL level. But McCreary, you know, could finish reps downfield a little bit better, could locate the ball a little bit better at times. You know, 2020, you know, had some big plays that he let up, but also, you know, made some splash plays as well. Had a ton of respect this year. And I know that PFF is very high on him as well. So that cornerback room, definitely. Other than that, you know, defensive linemen, a lot of debate over Jordan Davis. A lot of people don't want him, and a lot of people see him as a two down player and all these different things. Well, fact of the matter, it came out of Kirby Smart's mouth quite a few times that they just have a loaded defensive line. You can look at Devontae Wyatt, another first round kind of guy, but unfortunately has got himself involved in a domestic situation in 2020, and the Ravens typically steer clear of there. Otherwise, I would see him as a great fit, but Jordan Davis, if you don't want to go with, you know, Brandon Williams, or maybe even if you do, he has only played football for a couple of years. I think his first year of playing defensive line was his senior year of high school. He was an offensive lineman before that, a guy who, you know, was a basketball player who didn't really, you know, love the sport at all, gets to Georgia, turns into a maniac, gets into the weight room, turns himself into a real competitive football player, you know, 6'6", 6'7". You watch him in the first game of the year against the Clemson Tigers, see him, you know, not staying square, taking on some double teams and things of that nature. Then you go watch him against Alabama, and he is eating double teams. He is using his length. He is locking out. It's not only that he's big, and I've heard some people compare him to Terrence Cody, which I think is the worst comparison you can possibly make. It is that he has rare movement skills. He can corner a little bit. He has speed. He can force quarterbacks and running backs to banana towards the sideline and have to deviate wide and back to get around him because he can move. He is flexible. He can bend at the waist. He can bend at the knees. He's only getting better and better. He's not someone that you draft for year one and looking for him to, you know, be this immediate, you know, reigning hellfire player for you, this Micah Parsons, you know, level impact, but he's someone that could turn into a John Henderson or Marcus Stroud or one of these really tall, hulking, dominant nose tackles. And people say, oh, well, you know, he's not a three down player. Well, he's a nose guard, you know, Vita Vey, you know, very dominant. Anyone would pay him a lot of money right now. He's a nose guard. I ended up looking up from Sports Info Solutions, most sacks in the NFL this year out of a zero or a one tech. It was 2.5 from Adam Butler on the Titans and Jeffrey Simmons, I think, as well. So they do a good job down in Tennessee, but dating all the way back to 2016, only one player has recorded 5 sacks in a season as a zero or a one tech. You are a run defender as a zero or a one tech, but at the same time, if you're lining up there and you're able to dominate a center, guess what? The quickest way to end a play is from the zero or the one tech. They're going to, you know, shade a lineman, they're going to double team you. And guess what? That means more one-on-ones elsewhere. You're going to open things up. You're going to allow your linebackers to worry less about the run and worry more about the pass. You're going to allow them to flow sideline to sideline and make plays, keep a Patrick Queen clean, things of that nature. So Jordan Davis is a very intriguing pick for me. I think that he frees up so much on the back end for the Ravens and is going to turn into a dominant force as a two-gapping defender. He does look like he was taught to react to his man as opposed to the ball off the snap. So we see him, you know, in quick sets where linemen in the pass game try to attack him in pass blocking, immediately eats those up. A long arm, a swim, a chop, a club, you know, able to turn on them a little bit and generate pressure. So I would like to see him maybe look to the ball a little bit more so and have a little bit more awareness that way. But in the end, you know, he is going to be more of a dominant force against the run. You don't have to allocate as many resources there elsewhere. I think it just opens up so much for you defensively to have a dominant nose tackle like that, especially one with as much length as he has. He's an outstanding tackler. I think he didn't miss a single tackle this season for Georgia. So conditioning a little bit of an issue from him. He is still green. He is still learning, you know, a guy who's only been playing defensive line for like 3-4 years now. So you want to continue to see him grow there, and he absolutely will. A year with Calais Campbell, I think, would do him so much justice, being a 6'7" defensive lineman. Calais Campbell, 6'7", 6'8", and would be able to show him the ropes of how to keep your pad level low, how to bend, how to, you know, contort yourself, how to use leverage. And especially, I would like to see him use that hump move more that Calais Campbell used. I think that would be a great thing for him. So that's hitting on a lot of the names that have been kind of mocked to the Ravens and floating around a little bit here. But other than that, you know, I think that throughout this draft, looking to get maybe another tight end, a Jake Ferguson, a Jeremy Rucker, a Trey McBride out of Colorado State, second, third, fourth round. There's a lot of names there. Sleeper that I would look out for in this draft, Jalen Petrie out of BYU is a fit for the Ravens. Outstanding slot and safety defender. He's kind of that hybrid type. Elijah Molden coming out of Washington, Tyrann Mathieu, a playmaker through and through, has not allowed a touchdown in coverage on, I believe, around 100 targets in his career. 4 interceptions, multiple defensive touchdowns, elite run defender, and amazing blitzer coming out of the nickel as well. Comes out of Dave Aranda's defense, which is a simulated pressure defense that uses a lot of the same things. Dave Aranda and Ravens coaches have always been in communication, exchanging ideas, going back quite some time. So I think he's a name to watch out for. And I really wouldn't be shocked to see the Ravens add a running back in this draft. You know, if they don't want to keep, you can always have Devontae Freeman unless someone else needs him. Running back, adding maybe a Sincere McCormick out of UT, University of Texas, San Antonio, someone to definitely watch out for in later rounds. And the one sneaky thing I would say, the Ravens have invested a lot at wide receiver, but as of now, they really have a lot of slot bodies, and it would be nice to allow Hollywood Brown to thrive more so in the slot, run some more slot fades and working out of those tighter alignments, using his change of direction, his acceleration, his quickness a little bit more so. And watch out for maybe, you know, one of these two receivers that has some injury troubles to fit as another outside type receiver to allow an 11 personnel to maybe go on a set where you have George Pickens or Justin Ross on the outside, Rashad Bateman on the outside, Hollywood Brown and Mark Andrews on the field at the same time, trying to find maybe a T. Higgins type body type that's somewhere between Rashad Bateman and Mark Andrews that can threaten vertically, but also finally someone who can break some tackles and get some first downs, truck for you that way. So there's a very robust receiver class. This is a huge class in general that has a ton of outstanding players. Another tight end to watch out for, Charlie Kohler out of Iowa State. So tons and tons and tons of talent here. Early round, mid round. It's going to be interesting to see cornerbacks, offensive linemen, and defensive linemen. The Ravens really need to look at, invest in, and make sure that they're stockpiled there, because that is the foundation of this team. And feels like the Ravens need to ensure that they have insurance policies as well as young talent to move into the next generation, especially, you know, as Lamar Jackson's moving into that second contract. And I'll leave you with one final player out of an HBCU. That's Marquise Bell coming out of Florida A&M, a very versatile safety that has been a really strong defender over time that I think is going to be a great athlete and can do a lot for you on special teams. A redshirt senior, he's 6'3", 200 pounds. He's got length, can have some range to him, can do some things on special teams for you. So I think that he would be an intriguing option to put on that back end if the Ravens don't want to go after one of the more highly regarded safeties. So a lot there. The Ravens really can add pretty much anywhere. I mean, even linebacker too, considering, you know, Josh Bynes is older and Malik Harrison's had some struggles. So it's going to be interesting to see. But trenches, cornerback, I look for the Ravens to make some noise there. And I think that they end up getting doubling down on offensive line, defensive line, and adding a corner in this draft. So a lot of fun. Make sure to look for draft content as we're getting into draft season. It's that time, my favorite time of the year. So I'm excited for it, and we'll hit it from there.
Yeah, look at all that draft knowledge. And I know, Spencer, you're going to be putting out tons and tons of it over the next couple of months here as you try to find these best fits of the Ravens and just analyze these prospects in general. But that's all I have for you here today, Spencer. Thank you so much for joining me here once again on the show. Where can people find that content as it comes out throughout these next couple months here? And what do you have coming up on the docket recently?
Well, I'm going to be heading to the Senior Bowl at the end of the month to go see arguably the best Senior Bowl roster that I can remember. So you can find me at Ravens for Dummies on Twitter, Baltimore Beatdown. You can find the Baltimore Beatdown podcast on YouTube, and I'll be doing film content there as well. I'll also be joining Two Guys Watching Football with Cole Jackson and Mike Crawford to go through and rip some tape together. So I'm looking forward to that. And from there, we'll be able to build this board, find some good fits, and get excited for the draft, my favorite time of the year.
Yeah, it's a great time. And, you know, with 10 draft picks, you know, that might not be what the Ravens end up with at the end of the draft. But for now, there are so many different possibilities with just where everything could go and what directions this team could go in throughout this entire offseason. But thank you once again, Spencer. Be sure to check out Spencer's work. I promise you won't regret it. But that's all I have for you here today on Locked On Ravens. When we get back here tomorrow, we'll be continuing talking about this team, the direction that it should be heading in. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.